A minister was talking to children one day about showing kindness to animals, and he was telling them how the Bible teaches that a merciful man is merciful to animals. And he said, by will of illustration, he said, now suppose you saw a bad boy cutting off a cat's tail. What would you say to him out of the Bible to convince him that what he was doing was wrong? Well, little David Holliday called out, I'd tell him what God had joined together, let no man put asunder. And I can tell that because David's not here today. He's at home relaxing. Any of you who don't know where that's found is in Mark 10, verse 9. Well, we've all seen examples of this type of thing in our own children, if we have children. And I've given this example before, but it's kind of fresh on my mind since I just saw her a few weeks ago. One of my granddaughters, when she was 2 or 3, came in and said to her mother, Mother, my diaper's askew. Now, the word askew is not in my vocabulary. I've never used it that I know of. I've never written it that I know of. But I've used it maybe 10 or 20 times in illustrating this one example of what my granddaughter. And it doesn't surprise me. Her mother's an attorney. Her father has a doctorate in electrical engineering, and they're starting early trying to get her groomed for college. But anyway, this is the way children are. They're like that. They're very sincere. They're spontaneous. They're not pretentious. She wasn't trying to be pretentious. To her, that was a word that meant something. God has always had a special place in his heart for children. I wasn't here because I've been battling a cold. Hopefully I'm over it now. But the second Sabbath of after every feast, we have the blessing of little children. And when you hold these little children and you look down at their sweet, innocent faces, it's somewhat hard to visualize what in a decade plus a couple of years when they're entering the teenage years, they're going to be like. I went to a seminar once that was given by a doctor, and he was talking about the teenage years, and he said, ideally, what you should do or what we should have is that when your child reaches age 13, you put him in the end of this big, long pipe and pull them out at the age of 21 and not have to go through all of the stuff that you're exposed to during those years, ages 13 through 21. You know, of course he was being facetious about that, but there probably hasn't been a parent in this room who, at some point in your children's teen years, didn't sit down sometime with a puzzled look on your face and think back to that sweet little innocent baby that you brought home from the hospital and what they were like at that point in time, and think to yourself, what happened? Where did that little sweet innocence go? Well, maybe some of you have teenagers that, and maybe you're experiencing this type of thing right now. The teen years are particularly hard because they're a period of transition. People's lives or children's lives are changing, both physically and emotionally. They're becoming more independent. They're questioning more things. They want to begin making decisions on their own about a variety of things. This is, in a way, directed to the teens, the few that are here, but it's also directed to the parents, and it also is directed to all of us because the principles that I'm going to cover are applicable in some ways to all of us at different points in our lives. Some of you will be facing that situation with your own young children in a few years. And so, like I say, these can be applicable to all of us. Choices are very important for our youth, and they're very important for us as well. Some of the choices we make, some of the choices they will make, some of the choices they have made in the past and we have made in the past will determine what will happen to us for the rest of our lives. And I'd like to repeat that because it's very important. Some of the choices we make now will determine what will happen to us for the rest of our lives. Turn to John 8, verse 32. John 8, verse 32. And you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. You know, choice is a freedom, but it's also a power, and it's also a commandment. In Deuteronomy 30, verse 19, Deuteronomy 30, verse 19, God told Israel, I call heaven and earth to record this day against you, that I've set before you life and death. You've got two paths, you've got two roads to take. One of them will lead you to death, the other will lead you to life. But you have got to make the choice. Life and death, blessing and cursing, therefore, choose life. You know, it's a slam dunk, it's a no-brainer. Why would you not choose life? Why do you want to choose death and everything leading up to it? But you have that choice to make. That both, therefore choose life that both thou and thy seed may live. When I was still working, I was on the United Way advocacy panel for about 10 or 11 years. In the last four, I was chairman of that particular panel, so I became very well acquainted with the seven or eight United Way agencies that would come in every year that were assigned to us. And what we would do is we would meet with them several times during the year, and then at this time, whenever they presented their budget for the ensuing year, they would sit down and they would sell us on their agency, what it was doing. They would give examples of the different things they'd been doing. They would request, you know, United Way to solicit our support and funds for the next year. As a result of this process, we listened to many heartfelt stories from the people in the agencies and about the clients that they had helped. You know, we heard case histories and what their goals were. We basically heard, and they tried to justify the reasons for their existence and why we should continue to support them. One agency in particular that I remember very distinctly and very clearly, even though it's been years ago, was one that, and this wasn't their only thing, but they did have a specialty. They were the only agency and they were the only facility at that time that was dealing with it, but they were dealing with crack cocaine babies. They were the progeny of women who had been using crack cocaine during their pregnancy. and these little children had inherited the side effects. And it was just heartbreaking to hear the people describe what some of these side effects were. I can remember a nurse telling us that these babies would just cry incessantly, repeatedly, even though the nurses would pick them up and hold them and try to comfort them. It didn't make any difference. They just would cry and cry their little eyes out, and they finally would stop only after they were physically exhausted. They couldn't cry any longer. They had no more strength to do it. And to hear about that type of example, and, you know, our hats were really off to that particular agency and the people that were running it, because that, you know, it was really a challenge. And I think many people at the time thought that maybe there'd be no hope for the children, that they would continue to have all and exhibit all of these tendencies into adulthood. But just recently I read a report that seemed to indicate otherwise, that, you know, thankfully, that they are some normal kids that come out of that, that they have a normal life. But it takes a period of time for them to completely cleanse that, the effects of the drug out of their system. Well, everything we do, every minute of every day, involves making choices. You know, do you think the women that were using the crack cocaine when they were pregnant were giving any consideration at all as to the impact this would have on their children? I'm pretty sure they didn't. When they took their first snort or whatever, or however they took it. Well, every television program we watch, every movie we see, every friend we choose, every choice we make is going to impact our lives, either for our benefit or for our detriment. So let's examine several biblical principles that can be critical to helping us make the right choices. And like I said, while this may be directed to young people, it's applicable all across the board. Doesn't make any difference what age you are. Choose your friends wisely. Choose your friends wisely. You know, it's been so long ago, I can't remember exactly where I heard or read it, but there was a statement made something like this: become the thermostat, not the thermometer. Become the thermostat, not the thermometer. The thermostat, or the thermometer, goes up and down. It's continually moving, reflecting changes in the heat, reflecting changes when it gets colder, always moving. So it's volatile, it's changeable, it's not stable, it's not stationary, unlike the thermostat, which sets a specific temperature and then stays there. So they're saying, be like that with your life. Don't be a thermometer, constantly changing, constantly being affected by what's going on around you. Be strong and be stable. And you set the pace. You set the, or establish where you want to go in your life, and then don't deviate from it. Don't run with the wrong friends. You know, I don't need to point them out in particular, because you know what they're like. They distinguish themselves as troublemakers. And sometimes, for whatever reason, they can be very popular, they can be the jocks, they can be the iconoclasts, those that you see. They march to their own drummer. They dress a certain way. I have a granddaughter that had about 18 different colors in her hair when she was young. And I thought she would never grow out of it, but I saw her at a wedding 3 weeks ago, and her hair was all one color. So there is hope for people like that. But that's kind of an inconsequential, insignificant thing in one way, except it does demonstrate someone that's thinking outside the box. You know, they're marching to their own tune. And that's not necessarily all wrong, depending upon, you know, to what extent it goes. One of my best friends in school was like that. He was good looking. He was popular with everyone. But you paid a price when you hung out with him. In grade school, I made more trips to the principal's office and had a yardstick broken over my rear end more times than I care to remember. And many times, I mean, I'm not saying I didn't do things on my own to deserve it, but many times it was because of something that had happened because I was associated with Mike. You know, my first home brew was when he brought one to the eighth grade and we all sampled it. My first chawing tobacco was in the eighth grade when he brought one. I mean, he was that kind of person. He was very, very magnetic, and you were drawn to him. He had a lot of charisma. But you paid a price for that. And that didn't end in high school. In high school, I played in the band all 4 years. I had a straight A average. I played the trombone. And one spring, I think this was in our junior year, the band had a field trip to Seattle, and we went downtown. There was some kind of a competition. I think it was out at the University of Washington. And then we went downtown to go to a movie or something. Afterwards, we were supposed to meet back at the school bus at a certain time. Well, Mike says, let's go down to the waterfront. So I tag along, and we're down there riding boxcars back and forth. As they were switching, the engines would kick the boxcars out. You know, they were making the train up. That was nuts. We could have fallen under the train and under the wheels. It was very dangerous for someone that didn't know what they were doing. Consequently, we didn't get back to the bus on time, and consequently, the band teacher gave us an F, both of us, for that particular quarter. And thinking back, I sometimes wonder if the teachers didn't factor that into the final grade average, because, you know, it didn't seem to affect my average that much, but an F is certainly going to impact what people think of you, because it indicates something happens. Now, the rest of the teachers probably understood that that's a type of thing in a small school that everyone knows about. Anyway, the point is that if you start, I mean, if you hang out with people like this, you're going to pay the penalty for it. If you want to have a good life, don't hang out with the bad boys or the bad girls. Sure, they may be attractive, they may drive nice cars, they may have nice clothes, but you hear rumors about how certain girls have to leave school or disappear for a while because they have an unwanted pregnancy. Or those that don't go that route and have the baby, but have an abortion. You can't tell them anything at that time, but I've talked to people, and this happens years after that someone's had an abortion, and they think about that that child that was terminated, you know, at a certain time. What would he be doing at this age? You know, my children's first steps, my children's first prom, or their wedding, or their graduation from high school or college. And you can project that scenario out into the future. The wrong choice of friends can destroy our lives. The wrong choice of friends can destroy our lives. You know, the kid who has a drinking or drug problem, and yet you date or hang out with him, and as the aid units are prying your body out of a car that's wrapped around a telephone pole before it bursts in fire, you're not thinking at that time what your mom and dad told you about hanging out with people that were driving and drinking. Those thoughts don't occur at that time. You know, and I know some of you now are probably thinking, hey, I've heard all of this before. They lecture to us in school about that. I'm addressing this to the children or teenagers. That's true. They do. Hopefully you listen. Sure, maybe you have, but what choices did you make as a result of hearing that information? What choices are you making? And what choices are you going to make in the future? Too often, we don't think about the consequences of our choices. And I know I mentioned this before, but I remember attending the funeral of a grandson of a church member. Just graduated from high school, very popular boy, good looking. The night of graduation, he was out drinking with friends, involved in an accident, he was killed. When I attended his funeral, there were a number of people there, young people in particular, because he was well-liked and well-known. And some of the girls were literally shrieking. When I hear the word shriek, that's exactly what I mean. They were sobbing uncontrollably about his death and their loss. And as I sat there and listened to them, I thought, you know, how sad it was that they didn't have the hope, at least in that point in their lives, that we have about the future. You know, the sheer desperation about their loss was very evident in their voices. And it was just heartbreaking. You know, what do you tell someone like that? But here again, we were seeing the consequences of a choice that had just occurred. We have all had choices, and we're going to continue to have them. Some of the consequences of the choices we made in grade and high school will follow us all the way through our lives. Some of them may be very harmless. However, if a certain pattern is established and we don't change it and it follows us into adulthood, we may be in real trouble. For example, if the habit of giving in to peer pressure has been formulated and established, you may be facing real danger at some point. So it follows that we need to choose our friends wisely. We need to choose our friends wisely. Proverbs 3, verse 31. Proverbs 3, verse 31. Envy thou not the oppressor, And you could just as well put the word bully in there, because that's what an oppressor is. Envy thou not the oppressor or bully, and choose none of his ways. You know, every so often you read about someone who has taken their own life because of being bullied, either physically, personally, or being bullied on the internet. Do you want to hang out with friends who exhibit this kind of behavior, you know, which can ultimately lead to a tragedy like that happening? Do you want to be associated with that? Do you want to have that hanging on your conscience for perhaps the rest of your life? Proverbs 14, verse 20. Proverbs 14, verse 20. The poor is hated even of his own neighbor, but the rich man hath many friends. You know, what's not to like about someone who's rich? You know, they don't need anything. Your parents give them nice cars, they have nice clothes, etc. But oftentimes these are all surface, and when you peel back the layers, you may discover an entirely different person underneath all of that luster and all of that exterior, and the exterior trappings of, quote, success, unquote. Proverbs 18, verse 24. Proverbs 18, verse 24. A man that hath friends must show himself friendly, and there's a friend that sticketh closer than a brother. That is how you make friends. You reciprocate their overtures to you, or you make the overtures. You've got to put some effort into it. If you want to have something worthwhile, if you want to have a relationship that's worthwhile and a friendship that's worthwhile, and you're going to end up, if you do that, with a genuine friend, someone that will stick by you, you know, when push comes to shove, when the chips are down. Proverbs 22, verse 24. Proverbs 22, verse 24. Make no friendship with an angry man, and with a furious man thou shalt not go. When I was in college, I was in a fraternity, and there was a younger guy who was a couple years behind me in school, really good looking. His name was John, or we called him Johnny. He drove a sleek, low-slung Jaguar convertible, white-colored, that his parents had given him as a graduation present before he went off to college. You know, he was a good-looking guy, and he was fun to be around. He was always joking, laughing, except underneath his affable exterior resided a layer of latent anger, which I didn't fully realize existed until one day he invited me to go to a party with him. So I get in the car and we drive up to Oakland, which is a couple hours away from where we were living at the time. And this is basically a group of college kids. You know, it may have been another fraternity or sorority or some kind of a party there. But in any event, we each kind of blended into the crowd. He was up at the bar talking to a group of men, and I sat at a table and was talking with a girl. And suddenly I looked up and I heard this loud noise coming from the bar. And I could see he was surrounded by seven or eight guys. I mean, these were big guys. I don't know if they were football players or what. And so I walked up there to see what was going on, to see if I could help him. And apparently, there was an argument about the Vietnam War. This was at a time when Vietnam was in the news quite frequently, and it was very controversial. And I don't remember how the argument started, but apparently he had said something about the war and about our part in it that had excited and just incensed one of the men there. And he was so mad because a close family member of his had been killed in Vietnam. And so I step in between Johnny and this guy, and I told the guy, you know, I can understand how you feel, because my only brother was killed there also. Now, you have to understand, this happened before I was in the church, several years. So to me, that was a little white lie, but I wanted to diffuse the situation, and it did. That seemed to take him aback a little. And I dragged Johnny out of there, and we got out of there before they decided to personally declare war on both of us. But I never went out with him again, because I had recognized that that anger was something that I didn't want to be a part of. And it was so easy for him to get angry. So do not make friends with an angry man or woman if you're choosing friends. Leave that kind of person out of your choices, because you're asking for trouble. John 15, verse 13. John 15, verse 13. Greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. You know, we need to choose the friends in our lives that we can count on, that we don't have to be wondering, well, if I get into trouble, are they going to help me, or are they going to be long gone? That's what Jesus did for us, and that is the type of quality that we want to look for in potential friends we will run with, or those people we hang out with. Will they stand beside us? Choose friends, but also another thing, another choice you have to make, is you have to choose the standards you plan to live by now. Choose the standards that you plan to live by now. So it's very important. You know, do it now. Decide what you believe in and stand up for it. You're being exposed to right, good, beneficial, correct standards every Sabbath here at church. But while you're exposed to them, you have to ultimately decide whether you'll live by them. You may hear them, but do they go in one ear and out the other? Or are they so much a part of you, it's embedded in your DNA almost, that, yeah, this is what I believe, and this is what I plan to do. And it's not saying that we're doing that perfectly, because all of us slip up at time to time when it comes to certain things. But is that the type of standard that you are trying to establish in your life? Deuteronomy 30, verse 19, you don't have to turn back there because we already read it, but just reiterating, I've set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore, choose life. Why choose death? Don't do it. Choose life, that both you and your seed shall live. So it's going to affect your children, and it's going to affect your grandchildren, your progeny. That you may live to go to your first prom if you're a teenager, or that you may live to have a wedding, or attend that of your children or grandchildren. That you may live to see your first child or grandchild born. Your children graduate from high school or college. All of these milestones that happen in all of our lives. Are you going to go through your life and be able to experience those things? Or will you, your life be so destroyed that you won't be able to participate, either physically or emotionally? Another thing that you need to choose is to choose a field that you want to enter. You know, you may think, oh, I have a lot of time. I'm in grade school now, or I'm high school, and I still have plenty of time. I'm a kid now. I want to have fun. I won't disagree with you on that. We all need that. We need, you know, God gives us a childhood for that type of thing, for us to grow and learn. But also start thinking a little ahead. You know, you're going to be surprised how rapidly that time is going to evaporate. And someday you may be holding a college diploma in your hand in a field you're really not interested in pursuing, and wonder, now what? Or better yet, how did I get to this point in my life? Try to look at the long-range results of your choices. You know, I know some of this may seem very heavy and burdensome because, as I said before, there's plenty of time. I mean, that's the feeling, the general feeling you have as a child. That's often the distance. It's not right around the corner. But as I said, you'd be surprised how fast those milestones enter your life. And you sit there wondering, where did the time go? That, you know, and like I said, when you're a child, your parents want you to enjoy life as a child. And they can help you in that regard. They can help steer you and introduce various options to you. And that's part of the job of a parent. At the appropriate time, maybe they can take you down and visit a fire station or the shipyard or the railroad or an office building, or give you a variety of experiences so you can see the environment, what it would look like if you were actually working in it. That's something they can do to help you. They, of course, should help, but never try to force a decision on you based on their own experiences. Because, I mean, these experiences can be helpful in illustrating to them maybe pitfalls of doing something a certain way, but you're the one that has to make the choice, because what their decision was may not necessarily be the one that you should be making. I worked for my dad for one summer, and he wanted me to eventually take over his tire shop. But I could tell just from that one experience that I would never be happy in that particular environment. I needed the structure of a large organization. I'd functioned better in that kind of environment. And fortunately, I recognized that early in my life. The funny thing and the irony was, he told me, you know, John, after he'd retired, if I had it to do all over, I would have never worked for anyone else. And I thought, how funny. I never had that desire to be my own boss. So you have to be wired in such a way that you're capable of doing that and enjoying it. And like I said, I recognized that wasn't what I was cut out to be and what I was cut out to do. I remember reading a book that was talking about a man who had been an attorney for 20 years, and he hated it. He couldn't stand that job. And he finally took a battery of tests, and they showed that he should have been working outdoors, preferably working with horses. And he was amazed at that because the thought of doing that was very exciting to him. So he left his law practice and began training, working with horses, and he was so happy. I think what had happened in this case, he'd come from a family of attorneys. Grandfather was one, father was one, so it was expected for the son to become one. But that wasn't what he was cut out to do. Of course, a change like that doesn't happen overnight. That transition took a little time. It took some, time and sacrifice on his part. But that's the reason, if you choose wisely when you're young, if you select a career or are able to select it early on, you can save yourself a lot of time and sleepless nights along the way. You know, when you enjoy the work you do, it's very easy to throw yourself into it. And it can be very emotionally satisfying. And finally, and we always love to hear those words, you need to develop a strong bond with your parents. Tell them you want to have a better relationship with them, if it currently doesn't exist. Tell them how much you love and appreciate them. You know, I try to tell my children, either in writing, if it's an email or a card or a letter or whatever, or on the phone or in person, I love you when I say goodbye to them. That's not foreign at all to me. But the words, I love you, and the words, I love you, never go out of style. And we as parents need to set the standards for our own children and grandchildren so they have that example and they'll be able to utilize it themselves someday with their own children and grandchildren. And children, those children who are hearing this and understanding it, ask your parents what you need to do to improve. And parents, this is where you can help. You know, they'll tell you what they want. They'll tell you what they think they need. Maybe it's not always financially available, but you can explain that, and you can work toward a goal of doing that. You know, our children never grow tired of hearing our words of reassurance. It doesn't make any difference how old they are, how old you are, of feeling that arm around their shoulder, letting them know that everything will be all right. An Irish grandmother told me once, you can't put an old head on young shoulders, and I've never forgotten that. You can't do it physically, but if you choose your friends wisely, if you choose the standards you want to live by now, if you start to think about choosing the field that you want to enter and choose to develop a strong bond with your parents, you'll be way ahead of the average person out there your own age and on your way to a satisfying and emotionally rewarding life. Today you've viewed a number of choices. The ministers in this church, your parents, and especially God, hope that you will choose wisely when you have a decision to make, so that you'll have a good life here and now, but more importantly, in God's kingdom forever.